Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing rates for savers sinking lower, housing is hot, and saving Halloween.
That's right, Joe. We have a lot of stories to get to on this Friday flight episode where we cover some different news stories that we've seen in the headlines, how they pertain to our personal finances. But first, man, I've got a frugal or cheap for you.
Oh, bring it.
529 plans. We've talked about them before on our show. They are accounts that allow you to invest money in the markets that's going to go towards higher education, right? A lot of times folks will set them up for their kids, but anybody can use them. But my question for you is it frugal or cheap to ask family members to donate to a 529 plan that you might set up for a child?
Oh, that's a good question.
And so the reason I wanted to ask you this is because we've had some birthdays recently, and we have either been getting cash for the kids or even toys. And this is problematic for a couple of reasons, right? You know, we have plenty of toys. We don't necessarily need more of, you know, pieces of plastic or games or books around the house necessarily. Like, we go to the library. So that's problematic. But secondly, cash, like literal cash dollar bills. And that's kind of an issue these days because a lot of places aren't actually taking cash when it comes to actually spending that money. And we don't have a local bank anymore. We're online only. And so I also can't just deposit it and kind of siphon that money over into one of the kids' accounts, you know, where we kind of save up their money for them personally. And so we're stuck with, you know, either toys or cash kind of sitting around, and we're not totally sure what to do.
Yeah, that is the one downside of online banks, right? It is like when you need to deposit cash, when you get a sum of cash and you're like, I can't take it somewhere.
Yeah, most of the time it's not an issue because you can, you know, it's pretty easy to spend it. But these days we have found it's a little bit tougher. You know, like we're doing some accounting where we're like, okay, well, let's budget less. You know, maybe $100 less for groceries this month, and we'll put that $100 bill towards groceries. But even that is not necessarily ideal.
Yeah, true. I think it's okay to ask parents, grandparents, loved ones to donate to a 529 plan, maybe in lieu of gifts. But I think that can be a touchy thing as well, because oftentimes grandparents just get so much joy from giving their grandkids this tangible physical gift that they can play with. And so, I don't know, maybe it's kind of a split the baby here where you say, hey, listen, maybe take half of the money that you're going to spend on birthday or Christmas gifts and put that towards a 529 plan, please. And then the other half, if you could maybe get, you know, toys, or maybe one bigger toy, because I completely agree with you. We're inundated with toys and things in our house. Like, we don't need more of them, but I know how much joy it brings to my parents to give them something special. And in particular, we love outdoor toys because they don't clutter the house as much. And like a scooter or something bike related, whatever, is great. But yeah, and we're starting to get into board games a little more too. Those are good. We could use more board games, I guess. But I love the idea of asking people to do that. But yeah, maybe a little bit of both is the way to go.
Nice, man. Yeah, that's a good thought. That's a good way of doing it. We haven't covered this yet with any of our parents, you know, but it's something that was on our minds recently. We're like, you know what? Like, instead of doing this, like, maybe they could do this. But sure, we don't want to deprive our parents of them, you know, having some of that joy of being able to give some of those gifts to the grandkids as well.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, let's get on to the Friday flight. Now that we've, I think, answered that question, and I don't think it's cheap. I think it's frugal, but you got to do it in the right way, you know, because you don't want to hurt any feelings when you're making that request.
I think that's the right way to do it. I agree.
All right, let's get to the stories we found interesting this week. Matt, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about civic duty. And
we talked about voting.
We did. And it's obviously incredibly important with the passing of John Lewis, who was our congressman here in Atlanta. You know, he has a quote about voting and how it's essentially the most powerful nonviolent tool that we have. And we agree. We think voting is just an incredibly important thing for everybody who lives in a democracy to do. Well, we wanted to mention that many companies are being more understanding when it comes to the time it takes to vote. More than 800 corporations have signed on to the Time to Vote pledge. So not only are employees getting paid time off to vote, some companies are even offering that PTO if employees volunteer to work the polls, which I think is so cool. Older volunteers are staying home due to COVID, of course. This is a pretty timely benefit, though, that's worth considering alongside other benefits like healthcare coverage and retirement offerings like a company match. Like, does your employer care enough about you to give you time off in order to vote? So yeah, it's great to see companies prioritizing not just pay and benefits, but also saying, hey, you know what? You should have and you deserve the time to be able to participate in our democratic system.
Yeah, and you know, if your company isn't offering this, if this isn't necessarily something that they have sought to introduce, I think that's something that you could even advocate for as an employee. It's something you can ask for. It all kind of depends on just your company, the culture of your company. Because really, where you work, it makes all the difference, you know, like not only in the benefits that they offer, but also too when it comes to pay. We saw recently that Hobby Lobby, they just raised their minimum wage to $17 an hour. Target is now at $15 an hour minimums as of July. And now Walmart, man, they are doing a great job raising pay for a lot of workers beginning in October. And they're not just raising pay across the board, you know, they're doing it by introducing some of these different roles, some of these like new team leadership roles. This should give a lot of employees more room, you know, for career growth and for pay growth. And so if you are looking for work, make sure to know what the pay structure is like, as that could have a big impact on your career and your earning potential.
Yeah, it's great to see some of these companies institute a minimum wage that's even higher than what you know some politicians in Washington are proposing. There's another interesting story, Matt, about Etsy and how essentially some people have done incredibly well making masks and selling them on Etsy. Between April and June this year, shoppers purchased more than $346 million worth of face masks.
Just in face masks.
Just in face masks at Etsy stores.
That is so much money, dude.
Yeah, it's incredible. And as many individuals found themselves in a precarious financial position this spring, more than 100,000 sellers started selling masks and positioned themselves to grow their business by providing for the massive demand that was out there for face masks. It's this really cool story of resiliency that shows that there is opportunity if you're out there looking for it, right? If you're willing to pivot and you have a needle and thread and maybe some fabric, you can start making some masks and start making real money building a business on Etsy. It's cool to see how a bunch of different sellers have done that.
As long as you're not making like a crocheted mask, you know, like with like big old gaps in it.
Exactly.
Those don't work.
No, those don't work at all.
Have you bought any off of Etsy? Do you have like a favorite face mask that you always go to?
Well, I've got one that my mom gave me and I've been wearing that like the whole time. I just wash it from time to time.
That's so funny. Like most of the masks that Kate and I use, also my mom gave us.
Oh, really? Okay. So thanks, mom.
Yeah.
There's some local artists that have released masks and I've thought about getting one of those, but I just haven't pulled the trigger yet, but maybe I will at some point. You know, a brewery mask would be good too, right?
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. Our local bike shop, they make like those different bags that you can put on your bike for like bike camping and, you know, for holding different things. Like, you know, I forget what they're called necessarily, but they kind of strap on your bike. But they have been making some different masks and they actually look really cool because they're really handy with the sewing machine and they look pretty dope. So
nice.
Yeah. Let's get to our Halloween story, man. Hershey's is trying to save Halloween. They created a website that's dedicated to trying to help you make a smart decision as to whether or not you should trick or treat this year. It is Halloween2020.org, but candy makers in general are, you know, I think they're nervous about how COVID is going to affect Halloween plans, as well as their sales, of course. Some cities have, you know, outright banned Halloween festivities, and health officials in other cities have issued just, you know, strong warnings about staying safe. And so, you know, while different folks are going to, you know, take varying approaches this Halloween, I think that site might be helpful as individuals out there, as families are going to make their decision. I was also interested to see that Halloween, it only makes up 1/10 of Hershey's annual sales. I was expecting it to be more.
Yeah, I would think like 30-40%.
Yeah, because like for me, like 90% or like 95% of the candy that I buy all year is because of Halloween.
Right.
But I guess other folks out there, they're kind of snacking all year long.
Yeah. I think for me personally, Matt, because Halloween is such a big deal on our street and it's on a Saturday night, like there's just no way it's going to get shut down.
I remember looking at it last year and looking ahead and being like, oh, next year's going to be dope.
Yeah.
It's going to be on a Saturday.
Like twice as many kids as usual.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any way to actually shut it down. So I'm just going to have to get one of those like long arms and reach into the candy bowl with it and drop it in kids' bags or something like that.
I think I saw something about some neighbors like creating this pipe where, you know, like you can drop candy into a pipe and kind of like feed it down towards, you know, I guess if your house is slightly elevated, which yours is, by the way.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
That would be a good way to deliver the candy.
All right, I might have to make that happen.
But yeah, it still kind of feels a little early to start having these Halloween conversations. But yeah, we love Halloween around here.
Never too early.
Let's talk about, too, man, the housing market. There is a shrinking supply of homes these days as fewer Americans are listing their homes for sale. And on top of that, man, with interest rates hovering at all-time lows, home prices are continuing to rise. And so while the housing market typically it cools off, you know, with the weather, we might not see that this year. The demand is there, but there's just not enough supply. I think this is natural, right? Folks are hesitant to open their house and allow strangers to walk through their house when there's a virus that, you know, folks are afraid of catching. And so, you know, it looks like we'll see a supercharged housing market continue to drive up prices for the time being, at least.
Yeah, it took just 22 days to sell a home in August. And that's the fastest on record. If you're a buyer, you got to be really careful right now, though, not to bite off more than you can chew. It's great to score a low interest rate, but a bidding war, and there are lots of those right now, could easily wipe out any savings that you might realize from these historically low rates.
True.
And if you do end up buying, it's so much more important now than it even normally is to plan to stay in that home for a minimum of 7 years. There's certainly no guarantee that prices continue to rise like this. And in all likelihood, at some point, right, things have to chill out. So if you're buying a home, make sure it's a long-term decision, not a short-term fix.
And if you're selling a home, congrats.
Yeah.
Because you're probably going to do all right.
Enjoy reaping those rewards. And then maybe go rent something for a while.
Why not? Let's talk to you a little bit about an IPO. This is something that I think a lot of folks hear about, but they're not totally sure. Like, what does it mean to invest into an IPO? It's in the headlines a lot. You know, there are a lot of them lately. And an initial public offering is when a company, when they go public and they issue stock for the first time, it typically allows them to raise a lot of money. We don't invest in individual stocks, you know, IPO or not. But because of the press attention that many IPOs get, I think it's even more important to avoid them. And for us, to at least to talk about them, you know, and if you are really interested, maybe in investing in an IPO, to invest with caution.
Yeah, IPOs do garner a lot of headlines. It's something that financial writers can write about, get some eyeballs, people get excited about a company that has been around for a while and has been successful. Finally, I can invest in that company. Sweet.
Yeah, there's typically a lot of hype.
Right, yeah.
Surrounding an IPO.
But take like a historical example of like Facebook, for instance. At IPO time for Facebook in May 2012, the stock sold for $38 a share. But by fall, it was down to $18 a share. And it took over a year for that stock to hit the IPO price again. Historically, that's on par. That's average for an IPO. They don't typically do well in the short term. Since then, of course, Facebook's been a great stock to own, but make sure that you're investing in a company for the long term when you buy that stock, because a quick payday is unlikely, and investing with short-term hope is just a bad investing strategy. Individual stock investing, I don't think, is something that most people should participate in, and investing in an IPO is something that even fewer people should consider. All right, Matt, we got more to get to, including just how bad savings rates have gotten for people that have money stashed away, and we'll get to that and some other stories right after this break.
All right, we're back from the break. This is our Friday Flight episode where we talk through a bunch of different stories here in a little bit. We're going to talk about student loans as well as a fiduciary rule that didn't quite happen, but we'll get to those in a second. First, though, let's talk about savings interest rates, man. They totally suck right now. If you've got some money stashed away in a savings account, you are likely earning very little money. But here's the thing. Low rates are, they're a little yin and a little yang. For folks who own a home, you know, the opportunity to refinance has been incredible. You know, you're able to lock in a 30-year mortgage right now at a rate at or below 3%. Like, that is virtually unheard of. You know, even though, as we mentioned, home prices are through the roof. That was a pun for you right there.
Nice pun, buddy.
But at the same time, anyone who has been a decent saver is feeling the crunch of these lower rates and earning close to nothing on the money in their savings accounts.
All right, so why the low rates? Why is this happening? Well, the reason the rates are so low is because the Federal Reserve announced last week that they would keep their benchmark interest rate near zero until 2023, or as long as it takes to help the economy bounce back from the impacts of COVID. By keeping rates low, the idea is that the Fed can help to encourage borrowing. So think low mortgages, more affordable student loans, even lower credit card rates, maybe, although credit card rates seem to have stayed pretty high, unfortunately. But this increased borrowing then stimulates the economy. But at the same time, it hurts How to Money listeners the most, probably because they're the ones who are most focused on building up meaningful savings.
Yeah, and even though borrowing rates are low, like we're definitely not going to encourage you to, you know, go out and get a loan to help the economy. We're not asking you to stimulate the economy for us
by taking on more debt.
Right. No. We still want you to save your money, even if savings interest rates are terrible. One of the best moves you can make is to find a bank that is paying a great rate. And then also, too, definitely make sure you aren't paying a monthly fee in order to have an account with them. You know, and so that means gravitating away from the big banks, even though you will lose the ability to deposit cash locally, like I was complaining about earlier, it's still worth it. And instead, that probably means moving, well, to a credit union where you can deposit locally, or an online bank. We're big fans of online banks. So check out like Discover, Ally, CIT, or yeah, one of the other online banks that pays a reasonable rate without charging unnecessary fees.
Yeah, and if you're looking for the best rate out there right now, well, it's kind of hard to find, right? Because anybody who has signed up for an online bank in recent months, they've noticed that rates have dropped precipitously. And so what looked like a decent rate now looks pitiful. But Axos is a bank that Matt and I have talked about before. Their rate is incredibly strong. It's much better right now than even some of the banks we typically talk about.
Yeah, I've had an online free business checking account with them for years for my photography company.
Yeah, and now they're offering interest rates out there up to 1.05%, which is like double what most of the other
banks
are. That
actually sounds pretty good compared to what a lot of the other banks are offering.
Yeah. Under normal circumstances, that's a terrible rate on savings, but right now it's great. Their mobile app and user interface aren't incredible, but if you're just looking for someplace to park an e-fund, well, check them out. We'll link to that account in the show notes. And the national average rate being paid to savers right now is 0.05%. So it's essentially minuscule, almost non-existent.
It's incredibly small.
So even though that Axos rate isn't anything to write home about, it is by far better than the average. And it's better than some of the best rates out there too, being offered by these other banks that we also like.
Yeah, so rates are low for savers. They're also low for borrowers. On the note of taking out loans, right, on borrowing, an interesting impact of the coronavirus is that the number of new federal student loans declined 42% during the recent summer months. Obviously, this is due to the uncertainty of what higher education was going to look like for colleges. I mean, and I think it's good to see, too, you know, that students and their parents, that they are hesitant to borrow a ton of money to pay maybe for fancier schools, in particular, with so many classes going online right now, or with a lot of colleges implementing online only, like after Thanksgiving, you know, when so much of the semester doesn't include the things that you are paying for, those non-tangible elements, it's tough to fork out a ton of money for that.
Yeah, for sure. And it'll be interesting to see the longer term effects of the pandemic on higher education. There's a big shift this year, but will it last? When the cost of college has easily outpaced the rate of inflation since the 80s by nearly 400%, it's possible that this could be a turning point. Or at least we might see a slowing of the insane increase of the cost of tuition and books. If you know a high school senior, now more than ever, it seems like a great time to consider a local community college for a couple of years to get those core classes out of the way without taking on almost any debt. And hopefully either your state offers free access to community college or you're able to pay for it in cash because the cost is so inexpensive and you can always transfer after 2 years and finish up at a different school.
That's right. Just make sure you read the fine print and you know what classes transfer, right?
Yeah, there was an interesting Facebook kerfuffle about whether community college credits transfer, and it's certainly important to do your due diligence beforehand to know which classes you're taking are going to transfer. But for the most part, that's not an issue.
Yeah, and on the note of student loans, you know, beyond just interesting, some great student loan news. I saw that Mike Bloomberg he's donating $100 million to 4 historically black medical schools. Charles Drew Medical School, Howard, Meharry, and Morehouse School of Medicine here in Atlanta. They are all receiving that donation, which is pretty awesome, man.
Yeah.
Still probably just a drop in the bucket, though, for Bloomberg's net worth, I'm guessing.
That's true. But I will say, when rich people donate a vast sum of money, I feel like there's always the headlines that are like, but that's not much of what they actually own. And I'm like, who cares, man?
It's still an amazing thing.
It's generous. Yeah. It's generous and it's great. And I don't want to diminish his gift. That's huge.
Sure.
And mad props to Bloomberg for making that happen.
Yeah. And also, too, typically sometimes donations like that will spur on other wealthier folks who might be expected to make a similar donation. It kind of encourages them to do something similar. And there's different pledges where folks sign up where they'll agree to donate a certain amount of their net worth, you know, when they die, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's like setting a good example, basically.
Exactly. Yeah,
for others to follow. Yeah. All right, Matt, let's get to our last story of the day. This one was about the fiduciary rule that was proposed a long time ago when Barack Obama was still president. And it's interesting that rule was basically never implemented because of a change in administration. And basically what that rule attempted to do was it would have required all registered investment advisors to make investment decisions that were in the best interests of their clients, which sounds like a novel concept, right?
Should be that way anyway, right?
Right, right. Exactly.
But it's not always the case.
Right. But yeah, like we said, that rule wasn't implemented. But it's interesting to see that there was a new study that found that because firms were forced to prepare and make changes anyway while they thought that rule was going to be implemented, many of those firms who adopted the fiduciary standard and stopped selling bad products to their customers have actually continue to do so. And so that means that even though there isn't a legal obligation for these investment companies, many of the giant advisory firms adopted the standard anyway, in essence, even though they didn't have to.
Yeah, it's like just the threat of that fiduciary rule being implemented was enough to kind of like zap these investing firms into some good behavior.
Exactly, yeah.
yeah, and so for example, the worst kinds of annuities out there, right? They have super high fees, which are terrible for almost all people. They saw a dramatic decline in sales a few years back as the fiduciary rule was moving towards implementation, right? But even now that we are moving towards a fiduciary standard, you know, those awful products aren't being offered at nearly the same rate. And so let's hope that trend continues because, yeah, high fee complex products like variable annuities, they are not in the best interest of almost anyone. So we would recommend for you to stay away from those annuities. Maybe stay away from single stock investing as well, unless you are really into it and you're doing all your research. Instead, go with just simple, widely diversified, low-cost index funds.
And if you do feel the need to talk to a financial advisor about your investments and about your financial future, well, make sure they are a fiduciary. Make sure they're willing to sign a pledge that says that they are going to do what's in your best interest, not what's in their best interest, not selling you products that benefit them.
Yeah, that's where the problem comes in. Because, I mean, like with the annuities, like some of the fees on those things were around 10%.
Yeah.
10% of the cost of the actual product was dedicated to commissions. That's mind-blowing.
Oftentimes those costs get a little buried in the paperwork too, so okay. So you don't notice them. But that was encouraging to see that even though the rule wasn't implemented like we would have liked to see, that it still had a really important impact on the industry.
Yeah, so that's a good trend.
Yeah. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks that want the show notes and links to some of the sites we mentioned in this episode, just go to our website at howtomoney.com.
Yeah, we'll be sure to link to that Halloween website as well as that Axos site as well, where you can find that 1% interest rate being paid to savers. So we hope that you are having a good Friday, that you've got a good weekend planned. Maybe at some point during the weekend, if you haven't left us a review, you could head over to Apple Podcasts, because if you like our show, if you find it helpful, we would love for you to leave us a positive, solid review over there. Those reviews always really help us out.
Yeah, perfect Sunday afternoon activity, writing a review for a podcast. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode then. Until next time,
best friends out.
Best friends out.